I'm not an academic. I'm actually a scholar activist, as well as a legal professional that has spent the large part of the last 10 years of my life actively organising on the ground, not only in Europe but across the world, in defence of Pan-African reparations. So what I'm actually going to be sharing with you in the short time that I have is some learning from the field, not from the theory, not in terms of what we think, but in terms of what we know. And I'm really making this plea because actually the reparations movement is not necessarily a homogenous movement, but we do have lots of expertise, and I'm making a plea for recognition of that expertise within the context of shaping and transforming international law, legal norms in terms of what we consider to be acceptable. And there's not enough recognition of this in terms of how change happens. So I begin in terms of the quote from former Prime Minister of Britain, Tony Blair, with his infamous statement of regret on the 27th of November 2006. I and many other members of our movement, the Pan-African Reparations Coalition in Europe, you know, campaigned vigorously against this position because of the way in which it was drafted. Tony Blair, being a lawyer, would of course know how to draft that statement. And it's amazing that Tony Blair at that time could have said that what was legal at the time would now be a crime, when in 1792, the Prime Minister of Britain, Sir William Pitt the Younger, actually declared no nation has plunged so deeply into this guilt as Great Britain. We go to 1926, and Sir Austen Chamberlain, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, actually said that the slave trade, as it is commonly called, was a crime against the human race, precursor to the term crime against humanity. So this declaration that slavery was a crime against humanity in 2001 was not actually the first time that we'd had murmurings coming from some sections of the British Parliament. So what am I sharing with you? I'm sharing with you this perspective because the Pan-African Reparations Movement for Global Justice, as we define it, is one of the most important global justice movements unfolding in the world today. We are in pursuit of an internationalist strategy of Pan-African reparations because we do not accept that we can look at reparations just on a local basis or on a national basis. Why? Because even the very identity that we now carry is not necessarily our correct identity. And it wasn't actually until 2006 that the United Nations acknowledged an international legal personality for people of African heritage, because this was one of the questions. Well, who are we? You know, what's this? It's a global case, essentially. It's a global issue because of the nature of enslavement. But how do we create a framework that is recognised by international bodies that encompasses this, you know, mixture of identities? So the term that was actually advanced in August 2006 was Afro-descendants. And Afro-descendants was officially recognised by the United Nations to identify the more than 250 million descendants of enslaved Africans dwelling in North America, Latin America, the Caribbean, and other parts of the slavery diaspora. The term actually refers to people who were forcibly dispossessed of their homeland, Africa, were transported to the Americas and the slavery diaspora for the purpose of enslavement, were subjected to slavery, forced rape, mixed breeding, also have experienced through force the loss of mother tongue, culture, and religion, and or have experienced racial discrimination due to a loss of ties to their original identity. Now, this is an international legal classification. And so that means that for those of us in the reparations movement, we cannot look at this movement, you know, outside of the global context of Pan-African liberation. that has been waging from the times that the first African was kidnapped on the shores of Africa. And where are we going with this? PARCO, as we are called, actually has a threefold strategy. Encompasses public education, the raising of legal consciousness, as well as legal literacy, through various structures, movement structures, as well as NGOs, as well as lobbying other non-governmental bodies such as trade unions, looking at universities, looking at educational establishments, and so forth. Then we are also engaged in terms of a power building strategy, which is looking at a multifaceted approach to reparations. Because reparations is huge, it's global, it encompasses so many issues, so many peoples of the African diaspora, and concretely what that will look like. We've come up with this vision in so many different ways. And so there are various structures that we are in the process of creating in order to recognise this. And some of these structures actually link into the wider global justice struggles and movements. In particular, we've been very successful in helping to shape the public discourse around reparations in this country, because we have consistently challenged the understanding that reparations is just about financial compensation. We've also worked to look at how structurally we can implement reparative policies in this country. In fact, we actually liaised so far as the Home Office. The then Fiona McTaggart, who was the Home Office Minister, actually sat with representatives of our organisation, our movement, and we're looking at how British government policy around equalities, around cohesion, and so forth could be linked to a reparative approach post-Durban. So this is some of the work that we've been doing. Now, in the short time I have, I don't really cannot really go into the whole issue of what is to be repaired, because essentially reparations is about making repairs. And I prefer to start with the damage first, because a lot of the times it's not helpful, because we are being forced to articulate and frame our demands within what is called so-called international law as it stands. This is impossible. Just as in the same way that with the civil rights movement, many of those who campaigned and brought about the changes in civil rights legislation had to go against the grain of what was considered the norms of the day. And it's the same with the reparations struggle. So in effect, when we're talking about reparations, it's important that we correctly frame the issue so that we can explain our cause to the world. Much has been written about this movement, much has been written about our prospects for success, but what I will say is that you cannot have an understanding unless you are within. Okay, you cannot understand exactly what that is about. The standard definition that we have been putting out there in terms of trying to shape consciousness has been a definition that was advanced at the first Pan-African Reparations Conference that was held in Abuja in 1993 by Professor Chimwezu. He said, money is not even 1% of what reparation is about. It's mostly about making repairs, self-made repairs on ourselves, mental repairs, psychological repairs, cultural repairs, organisational repairs, social repairs, economic repairs, political repairs, educational repairs, repairs of every type that we need in order to recreate and sustain viable societies. And this was concretised very succinctly by Asajifo Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Ghana, when he said we must have every inch of our lands and every one of our mines and industries. So the whole context of reparations, even if we look at the international principles that have come out in terms of the five strands, restitution, compensation, rehabilitation, satisfaction, and guarantees of non-repetition, we have actually come up with a global framework by surveying all the movements around the world, as well as unorganized Africans and African descendants, as to what it is that they would like to see in terms of reparations. And first and foremost, I have to say, reparations is about the continued African liberation struggle. Even the struggle to reclaim the continent of Africa. Because we talk about colonialism, we talk about enslavement, but these were more than actually serious violations of not only human rights, but people's rights, if we're putting it within an African context and paradigm of human rights. So the very borders that we have in Africa today, that were imposed on the continent of Africa, are part of the damage. So essentially, until we have a situation where, and comparisons have been made with the Jewish case in terms of the establishment of the State of Israel as being a focal homeland for the Jewish diaspora worldwide. But that's the case also with Africa. So essentially, outside of the context of a super state that can incorporate the lost sons and daughters of the diaspora, then all other attempts in terms of just meagre financial compensation would be meaningless. Now, my time is up, but I'd just like to end in terms of a plea, again, about the, you know, the need for recognition of the movement on the ground. It's not ethical or appropriate to research people as though we do not exist. If we were talking about the Jewish reparations claim, at the time it was actually being worked out, there is no way that the room would not be substantially full of those who were key stakeholders in that situation. We actually deserve the same respect and recognition of the law that we are creating by challenging the existing norms and challenging the mythology and the lies and deception that slavery was legal. Thank you.